Welcome back to the Word for Life radio ministry of Brookside Baptist Church in Brookfield, Wisconsin. We're thrilled to have you join us today and for us to have the opportunity to slip into maybe your car or your home and just chat with you about some principles that God has given us. I'm Pastor Greg Huffman, the counseling pastor and the senior citizens pastor at Brookside. With me in the studio today and last couple of days has been Pastor Joe Helm. He is specifically gifted and trained to help us in the area of stewardship and planning for the future. And Pastor Joe, we left our broadcast last time talking about powers of attorney. We were specifically saying there were two powers of attorney that everyone needed to make sure they had.
Yeah, let's put that in context. Basically, again, this is for the purpose of the management of you as a person and the assets that you own in the event that you become incapacitated.
Okay.
You're not dead, but you're incapacitated so that you cannot make your own decisions any longer, and you need to have someone appointed to do that for you. The law requires that. Either you're going to leave private, prepared, in advance documents that say who gets to do that for you. Normally, it would be your spouse or adult children as alternates. If you don't have those private documents prepared in advance as part of your plan, then the local county probate court has the jurisdiction to appoint somebody over you. Now, normally, if you don't have any documents, your spouse would, of course, be required to go to court, and the court would more than likely appoint your spouse as that guardian unless there were some objection, and maybe an adult child would step in and say, "No, wait a minute, Judge, I think my other parent is really not capable of doing this."
And sure,
if they could demonstrate that, the judge might bypass the spouse and name an adult child. But it would involve two broad areas of decision-making. Number one, of course, would be medical decisions, deciding what type of care, what type of treatment, whether it be surgery or whatever, maybe nursing home admission.
Nursing home, sure.
These types of things. All those decisions are the types of decisions that have to be made by someone. If you can't do it yourself, you've got to have someone. And it's either going to be this court-appointed guardian, or it's going to be your privately chosen person through your private documents that you prepared ahead of time, typically referred to as a health care power of attorney.
And obviously this would be someone that had the same philosophies that you had when it came to end-of-life decisions and what kind of medical care you would want and all of these types of things. If that person were responsible for making those decisions, it'd be best for them to know ahead of time what you personally would want them to do.
Oh, very much so. And discuss your spiritual principles, your convictions, your desires, etc. The other document that's very, very important would be what we call a general durable power of attorney. That is, it's like everything in the kitchen sink, because once you become incompetent, you're limited to the authority that you've granted to your power of attorney person to the things that you've put in the document. So the document has to be extremely thorough, and it would provide for decision-making regarding investments and the expenditure of funds, paying bills, doing banking, all the different financial aspects of life and decision-making that you would be responsible for were you to be competent, but now you're not. And so you need somebody to step in and do that. And again, more than likely, it would be your spouse first, with adult children to follow as alternates. That would be very, very common. So those are just a part of a really good estate plan that would provide for the private management of your affairs should you become incompetent, so that the family does not have to go to court and get a guardianship over you.
So these powers of attorney papers would be signed at any time, but not become effective until you either die or become incapacitated.
Well, yeah, actually on death, they're no longer valid. So death is the point at which now powers of attorney are no longer valid. They're only good for management if you're still alive but incapacitated. The medical power of attorney is only valid if you're declared incompetent. The financial power of attorney, the general durable financial power of attorney, however, could be written either way. You could have it say that it's only good if you're incompetent, but you can also have it say that it's valid immediately. And a lot of husbands and wives will have that for each other so that they could use it not just in the event of a total incapacity, but for a convenience. You know, say the husband gets transferred to California.
Sure.
So he goes out weeks ahead of time, starts his new job, wife stays home here, gets the house in order, sells the house. Well, if she has that power of attorney document, she can sign, take, for example, the sale of the home documents
right.
without having husband come back to that closing. So there's some convenience aspects to those documents as well.
I know when I was just a kid, my dad was delivering milk door to door here in Wisconsin and hit 52 degrees below zero. And he decided we're moving to Texas. And so he told my mom, you sell the house and I'll go to Texas and find a job and find a house. And so he never came back. My mom sold all the furniture, found someone to buy the house, sold the house. So they must have had one of those
yes.
power of attorney issues, because the next thing we knew, we got on a train and went to Texas.
Yes, yes, very much a great illustration of just the type of convenient situation that those can be helpful in.
Right. Now, as we consider then powers of attorney, those become in force when somebody makes that decision. Who is the somebody that makes the decision that that needs to take place?
That's a good question. On the medical power of attorney, the state law in Wisconsin, and I would suspect it's virtually the same in most states, would be two of your primary care physicians, typically, is what it requires.
Okay.
And so they would simply make that assessment. You as the patient, however, would have the legal right to object to that. And as a result of objecting, then they would be required to go to court and have a judge hear evidence, and then the judge would render a decision. That would be part of the due process that you would be entitled to if you objected. In 28 years of law practice, I have never seen anyone object to being declared incapacitated.
Okay.
Now, that's just me, one attorney out of obviously many. But in 28 years, I've been involved with well over 12,000 cases
oh my.
Of estate planning, and therefore I've had a lot of exposure.
Exactly.
And I've never had that situation. All the clients that I've seen or all the situations, the person is in fact incapacitated and simply acquiesces because they don't know any better. And so the family takes over, smoothly handles affairs, and it works very well.
And I guess, Pastor Joe, when we're talking about families taking over and making these decisions, it's vitally important that families have a good relationship prior to these things taking place, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. I mean, there's probably no more heightened time of tension and stress than at these times of death or the imminency of death. And, you know, you've probably heard kind of the phrase before that it brings out the worst in people.
Sure.
And it really does. I mean, money has a strong influence and a power over people. And in fact, I had just talked with a lady the other day. Excuse me, I talked to someone who referred the lady to me.
Okay.
And they had said that the lady had been telling them that she had just received a large medical award for an accident that she was in and the injuries she sustained. And she's now got children of hers that she hasn't heard from in 10 years, now all of a sudden coming back and wanting her to give them money. And so, you know, money does that, you know.
Right.
And so we have to be prepared and handle things wisely and be good stewards in that sense.
And obviously we all know that we would like for the family relationships to be good at all times, but yet we never have a clue when these types of things are going to happen. So as Romans 12 says, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men.
Well, the other thing you allude to there is preparation in advance. That's why I have so many people say to me, when I first start talking about estate planning or powers of attorney and everything, they say, well, everything's fine right now. We'll consider that down the road. Well, that's the point is that, like, you can't buy house insurance when the backside of your house is on fire. You've got to do these things when things are fine.
Exactly.
Because once you're declared incapacitated or you have a stroke or a heart attack or you get hit by a truck and you're in a coma, you can't sign any of these documents, and therefore your family is subject to the court system.
Sure. And as a pastor, so many times in my 42 years of pastoring ministry, it is so sad to go to a funeral and realize we have a divided family. And this is probably the first time in years that they've all been within the same four walls. And you can tell as soon as you walk in that things are really, really rough between certain members of the family. And it kind of causes you to feel like, Lord, it sure would have been neat if somebody had tried to become a peacemaker and try to work out these relationships so we didn't have to try to bring about some kind of peace when Mama passed away or when Daddy passed away.
Oh, you bet. And it's just very, very important to do these types of planning ahead of time. And, of course, a big part of that would be relationships and those types of things. You know, the other thing we could talk about, which is also very, very important, of course, would be ultimately then how does your estate get distributed?
Mm.
You know, now you're gone. Management issues are over, but you've got the need to distribute the material things that God did bless you with and, you know, gave for your management. And how do you do that? Well, again, fundamentally, it comes down to two options. You either do the public route or you do the private route, so to speak. The public route is having your estate go through the probate system. That is the local county court and the probate process, which basically is the idea that the court supervises the collection and the management and then the ultimate distribution of your assets. Well, you know, with relatively easy planning, you can avoid all of that. And it just takes doing it and being diligent to do it before the circumstance hits. And so typically that would be done through a number of mechanisms. There are some simple techniques. We call them operation of law techniques, where there's a law that just says, take, for example, joint tenancy. A husband and wife own a bank account together. Well, if it's joint tenancy, when one spouse dies, the law simply says the surviving spouse owns it. And therefore, all they have to do is show a death certificate, and they get it. That's
correct.
Called operation of law.
Right.
The other option is, because there's assets you can't do that on, but the other option is to do an appropriate document that would direct the distribution. And an appropriate document would be a will, number one, if you didn't mind and it was okay with you that the probate court would supervise, or you would do what's known as a trust document, which is, I like to say, kind of in a generic sense, it's like a non-probate will. It's a will that doesn't go to court. And so there are many kinds of trusts, however. So what I'm speaking of there is typically what we would know as a living trust.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a little bit, sometimes I call it a Cadillac will, too. It's kind of the idea is it's really just like a will, but it gets to be distributed and carried out without the probate court involved. And so very, very simple explanation there. But getting prepared in advance for the transfer of your estate will be the best thing you could ever do for those you leave behind, and it will be the smoothest, the least emotional, and traumatic for everybody concerned.
And we have run out of time again, Pastor Joe, and this has been just so informative, and I'm just thrilled that we've been able to spend some time together. Maybe we can do it one more time and just kind of answer some questions that folks may have concerning the distribution of their estates, and would it be a good idea to have both names on the deed of your property and on the title of your cars, and, you know, these kinds of practical issues that I'm sure you have run into in all of the thousands of cases that you've handled. But until next time, we trust that God will give you a fantastic day, and we trust that you will be a great steward of this day, because as I say when I answer the phone for my voicemail, today is a gift from God. Unwrap it wisely.